tweet at Today SOR.
Since the low point of the crash in early 2013, property prices nationally have increased by 83%. In Dublin, the recovery has been stronger, with prices up by 96% from their low in February of 2012. But the market may finally be showing some signs of slowing down, according to the latest residential property price index from the Central Statistics Office. The index, which includes data up to and including November of last year, 2018, shows that the price of property nationally increased by 7.1% in the first 11 months of last year. For the same period in 2017, the increase was just over 11%, indicating these figures all indicating a gradual slowdown. I'm joined now in studio by Marion Finnegan, Chief Economist with Cherry Fitzgerald Auctioneers, and Carl Dieter, Financial Advisor at MortgageBrokers.ie, to discuss this and to look at the property and rental markets and what they might hold for 2019. Marion, those latest figures showing an apparent slowdown in price rises, what do you think is behind that, and is it something that you expect to continue?
I think we will expect it to continue, actually. Over the course of the last 12 months, we would have seen that moderation occurring with increasing frequency as the months went by. I think it began with the tightening of the macroprudential policy rules at the end of 2017, where they effectively reduced the number of exemptions in the marketplace, which curtailed liquidity effectively.
Now, this is done by the central bank?
The central bank's macroprudential rules. So they originally would have had 20% of mortgage lending could have been above their thresholds.
And which they reduced, is what, 3.5%?
3.5 times
your salary.
Your salary. They reduced that down to 10% exemptions. So if you look at the average salary in Dublin and you look at the average property price, the relationship is about 4.5 times. So you are curtailing that market quite significantly. And what it effectively did was it slowed down the pace of price inflation, more notably in the latter half of the year than the beginning of the year. And looking into the year ahead, we're looking at a very similar year. Overall volume levels last year were on par. They were up about 4%, but largely on par with the previous year. So activity is somewhat muted as a result of this, more notably in the second-hand market than in the new homes market. So we have seen an uplift of sales of new homes, but we've seen a relatively flat second-hand market. And that makes sense within the context of the mortgage market. And looking into the year ahead, I think we're probably looking at low single-digit price inflation for Dublin and moderately higher outside of Dublin, but still below 5%.
Carl Dieter, do you share that view that this slowdown in prices is perhaps because first-time buyers are being squeezed by the tightening of those central bank guidelines?
Well, first-time buyers certainly are being squeezed in terms of where they are in the market because prices have gotten high. But it could also be seasonality. Since that low in 2013 that you mentioned, property prices, according to the CSO, have stagnated or dropped in January of 2014, December of 2014, February of 2016, December of 2016, November of 2018. So it's not as if in an upward market it's just always going to go up all the time. Now, it also doesn't mean that things are going to become really calm very quickly, because you also have the fact that when you're coming off growth of over 7%, it's unlikely to shoot down to 1. You also have rents still rising, and rising rents feed into the values of houses in a way that will still make people want to buy them, either for investment or to live in. So I think that it's fair to say that the rules do have an effect, but I don't know that it's going to be a cure-all that will resolve our housing market. If you look at where first-time buyers were in the market, in 2012, if you take individuals or couples who were earning less than 50,000, okay, average wage in this country is 35,000. Average full-time wage, though, is closer to 45. So if you take like really regular people, either as a couple or individually, who were buying homes, in 2012, in Dublin, they were 42% of the market, and nationally they were 50% of the market in terms of people getting mortgages. Fast forward to 2018, and in Dublin, average people who were first-time buyers now represent 7% of transactions and 18% nationally. And that's a drop-off, at least in Dublin, of 83% in terms of average people being able to afford a home in the city. Not a healthy sign. And the way to get it healthy, I guess, is to do a lot of the things that we are doing. So you've got to start building houses. Commencements are up. That's great. Planning is up. That's great. We're doing a lot of things, but it's not happening quick enough. And because of that, I don't expect the compression to end soon.
Just one of the stories that we've been carrying on our bulletins today, today, Marion, is that there's 1,500 extra jobs announced. Probably the biggest single jobs announcement ever. Now, on the face of it, that's really good news. But might it be bad news as well? I mean, where are these people going to live?
I think we've done a lot right in recent years. I think the Help to Buy scheme has been you know, phenomenally successful. So we are seeing that delivery of new homes. We have sold 23% more new homes last year than we did the year before, 33% more in Dublin than we did the year before. So we're delivering the homes. Now, you would argue there's still a long way to go.
But are they the wrong homes for the wrong people?
No. We're delivering starter homes, a significant increase in starter homes. The biggest problem that we have, I think, if you look at the marketplace, is a lack of properties for people to rent. That issue has never really been remedied. So if you look over the last 5 or 6 years, every year through our own sales, and we represent a large chunk of the market, about 35% of the people that we're selling property for are investors leaving the marketplace. And only about 1 in 5 of our purchasers are investors. Now, we do have this whole new professional investor sector which are coming in to buy property. Not a lot of stock available for them to buy at the moment. So therefore, we're seeing a contraction in available properties to rent. So while the Salesforce news is brilliant news for the economy overall, we want to see more and more of that. And one thing that could limit that going forward is availability of stock to rent. So if you fly into Ireland today and you want to rent a property, there are 3,000 properties advertised to rent. If you want to buy, there's about 22,000. Neither figures are good, but the rental one is a much more deep crisis. And that's where I have the biggest fears going forward in terms of our competitiveness, because rents are still rising very, very rapidly.
And Carol, if you can actually assemble the deposit, is it the case that you might be actually able better able to sustain a mortgage than to sustain renting a property?
Yeah, that's been the situation for a while because the rents are such a high price at the moment. Now, it's not a case that every rent and every mortgage stacks up where you're better off getting a mortgage. That's absolutely not true. But it is the case in many places that it is cheaper to take out a mortgage than it is to rent. But when we talk about those rent prices, I mean, those prices are still going gangbusters. It's up 7.5% according to the RTB in the last year. You know, it's nearly 10% in Dublin.
And despite the restrictions of supposedly 4%.
If you say to yourself, what's going to solve this? You see, you've got to get like more homes. We're trying to do that. Affordable homes in areas that are experiencing price pressure. Trying to do that too, but it's not easy. Rents need to stabilize. Not happening. Strangely enough, less job creation would probably help to moderate house prices, but we're seeing loads of jobs come in, and really high-paid jobs of people who can afford these high prices. Less wage growth, bad for people, probably good to limit the property market. And strangely enough, less international investment might also give people a chance to buy something, because when investors come in, like if you have a market where there's 10 things for sale and you've got 10 buyers, that's one situation. But if you've got 10 things for sale and you've got 20 buyers, the natural inclination of price is to slightly increase. That comes with a societal cost. It can be very good. If an institutional investor owns your home, your tenancy is actually really protected in a way that it's not with a small investor, because like a small landlord can say, I need that property for my son, or I want to sell it. You've got to get out. A resident or an institutional investor never does that. They don't have a son, they're a company, and they don't want you to get out because the value of the property to them is your tenancy.
I just think when we look at this, there's a massive problem with housing. It's no doubt, I think it's probably the biggest problem facing the government today. But the biggest challenge within that is getting supply through. So we've got a rapidly growing economy. We've got a rapidly growing population. Our net inflow into our economy last year was about 34,000. Every time somebody arrives in to live in Ireland, they require somewhere to rent or then to buy. And to solve this, I think what we've taken the approach of, certainly with the rental caps, to try and to prevent a pot, we're literally putting a lid on a boiling pot here. What we need to do is increase the stock of property.
Yeah, but on that point, Brendan Kenny of Dublin City Council was here with Miriam last week, and he said that there is a lot of building going on in Dublin, just not the right type. Hotels and student accommodation flying up, but not houses. Now, why is that?
But we've built significant increase on the year before, and one of the biggest challenges we have is we have come from an incredibly low base. During the recession, we were building next to nothing, and what we were building was largely standalone properties all over the country. So at the end of last year, we'll have built somewhere in the order of 18 or 19,000 houses in the country. We need to build 40. We're getting
40,
there. 40,000 units. Yeah, we've a long way to go. But just on the matter of building the wrong type of properties, if you look at the profile of properties being built, a very large proportion of them are starter homes. So we are definitely getting that right.
Well, it depends where they are, though. I mean, again, not that we want to confine this conversation entirely to the Dublin area,
sure.
But say if you look at the south side, a lot of the houses that are being built, Carl Dieter, they're up, you know, sort of 600,000, 800,000 for, you know, not particularly big houses, but because they're in the right area, they can command that kind of price.
That is something that is actually shown up in the loan level data as well, is that first-time buyers of new homes or buyers of brand-new homes are actually sometimes paying a lot more than people buying secondhand homes, and it's because they're in premium areas, A-rated homes, great properties. Like, we are building some great stuff now. You can be proud of that. What we can't be so proud about, perhaps, is the affordability element of it for a lot of people. But when you're looking at that idea that you said about the right types of homes, I sit in the Housing Committee with the Royal Institute of Architects, and one of the big things that goes on there constantly is talking about affordability in the city, and one of the architects there who works with some of the biggest developers in the country said at our meeting this month that there's almost no developers building apartments to sell in the city centre. The ones who are building apartments are actually building them to rent them out. And again, when you've got this rental market where when the new stock coming in is commanding very high prices and people can't buy, and yet they have these jobs that are located in areas such as the city centre with large tech firms making lots of money, they will pay that rent. And it doesn't make an incentive to want to build something to sell to a person when you can actually make a lot more money holding on to it.
And might there be another contributory factor there, Marion, that they're waiting for the guidelines, the building guidelines to change to allow for higher and for greater higher levels and greater density?
I mean, one thing we have to understand, in terms of our population need, we need a lot more apartments to be built. But building apartments is quite expensive. It's significantly more expensive than building standalone properties. So in terms of a market that has just become viable in lots of the country, and certainly outside of Dublin, is only becoming viable in most locations in the last 12 months, building apartments is a huge challenge. Now, if we understand that the principal problem we have is not enough properties, then we have to look at what are the blocks that are in place to prevent more properties being delivered.
Amen to
and
that.
One of that is the viability of development. If we understand that we need more apartments and more houses in all of our regional centres, we have to fast track. So the planning is in place now to achieve that, but viability isn't. And if we in terms of affordability, if we can bring the cost of delivering property down, that keeps affordability under
check.
How
would you do that?
I think there's a huge chunk of the development cost which is paid in tax. We need to address that. If, as a country, we accept that we need more properties, we should look at the VAT rate that is charged at 13%.
See, that's what people say got us into trouble in the past, having kind of incentives that will suit the construction industry, but it's not actually passed on to people buying.
But it's very simple to put controls in terms of prices in place. But if we want to ensure the delivery, the construction industry are here to deliver property. If we want them to deliver more, we have to ensure that it's viable for them to do so. And if the end game is a large increase in stock which controls prices and controls rent, I think it's successful.
Tax breaks for developers.
Again, I mean, I'm always kind of mixed on these because short term it might mean developers make more money and people hate that idea. I don't, because when you give someone an incentive to do something, they tend to do more of it, and you actually will hopefully get a calming influence in there. But when you talk about the kind of things that got us into trouble in the past, let's not lose sight of what we all agree on. We overbuilt in the past with such incentives. So if we need to start overbuilding now, how can you claim that that medicine wouldn't be exactly the kind of thing that would work for it?
Right. A lot of text coming in our way. Says listener Jill Kirby, actually a regular contributor on Financial Matters. And she's saying, if institutional investors who value tenants are better landlords, why are they not offering long-term leases and security of tenure?
Well, I think we are seeing a huge influx of institutional investors. In the last year alone, about 1.25 billion euros was invested in the PRS sector, some of it directly in standing stock and some of it forward committed. So we are seeing a massive inflow, and that is going to professionalise the rental sector, and that's a really good outcome. But we have to remember, we're a very sparsely populated country. Institutional investors will invest in areas of dense population. So Dublin is an attractive location, Cork is an attractive location, and perhaps Galway and Limerick, but not the rest of the country. Sligo, Mullingar, we require other investors to come in and provide rental accommodation. We need rental accommodation all over the country, and we're not getting that. We're losing them, and that's critically important.
What the institutional investors don't do is guarantee you a pretty good price, whereas, in fact, a small landlord quite often will keep the price down if you're a good tenant, because they don't want the hassle. So Jill is correct on that side. Like, you're not getting this, you know, security in terms of your price, but in terms of your security of tenure, one of the main things that gets people moved out of a home, other than the stuff they deserve to be moved on for, such as, you know, crazy behaviour, antisocial behaviour, and not paying the rent, is this thing called Part 34 of the Tenancy Act, where someone can say, I want that property for a relative of mine. Well, an institutional investor is a company, therefore they have no relative. So in a strange way, you are actually greater protected than you are if you have a regular landlord. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we've got to think about. When we talk about blockages as well, I want to say a huge kudos to a politician named Jimmy Geeran. I don't know him from Adam. I just know he has a kind-looking face, but I saw a clip of him.
He's a councillor in... is it Fingal?
Okay. Look, but he was on... that's where I saw it then. It was Fingal TV. They record their council meetings. And he was on talking about driving past places and acknowledging that the process of getting houses built during a crisis was being slowed down by all sorts of things, including the body politic. And he was looking at the number of homeless people in St. Anne's versus the number of geese that he saw and things like that. I just think that if we want to have more construction, there are things that aren't palatable, such as, yes, build in my backyard, such as, yes, perhaps the people who are doing this have to get tax breaks. Maybe the state has to give away land and then tax it later or try something new. But if we want to end the cycle of underproduction, there is known remedies for that, and they might not make you happy, but if they work, then that's part of the cure.
Another caller saying, I've been listening to this type of conversation for the last 4 years. Bring in a rent tax and a tax on land. This will control the market, says Kevin.
They have a rent tax. Yeah. It's called Case 5 Rental Income. It's taxed at the highest rate typically.
Exactly.
In terms of a tax on land, we also have that. We have obviously the vacant site tax. Could have been done better. And I totally agree that all land in this country should be taxed. I'm a huge believer in site value tax or land value tax. But again, you know, you want a cure soon. That's something that's a longer term kind of secular type solution rather than a short term strategic
one. Just one or two other quick points. Some of them raised by Sinead Ryan in her column in the Property Independent today. She was saying that the term, because of the way things have gone, and we gave the figures at the start of this item, she says the term negative equity is becoming a thing of the past as a result of the increases in values over the last number of years, meaning finally that people who bought Legoland apartments during the boom and which are now too small for growing families can finally consider moving into the coveted three-bed semi.
We are seeing a lot more people move out of negative equity, and that level of price inflation from the bottom of the market has facilitated that. And that, but that really has only occurred in the last 12 months. We are seeing a much greater level of price, much greater level of stability in terms of price inflation. So the capital value market is well regulated at the moment. The challenge we have is delivering the stock in that regulated market and delivering the right type of stock all over the country. And I think what we're doing at the moment, we are delivering quite a large volume of starter homes, which are traditional family homes. We need to ensure that we're delivering the right type of properties, and that means apartments as well.
Yeah, I think Sinead touches on something interesting there, though, because what it shows is that there's actually always a housing crisis somewhere. It just depends who's being affected. You know, 4 years ago, it was people with mortgage arrears. A lot of them still have mortgage arrears. That's a housing crisis. There's people in negative equity. That was their housing crisis. They're cured now. Most of them are. And now the new housing crisis is rents and prices and homelessness. And the next housing crisis will be something else.
Another point she makes, and it's one you've made yourselves this morning, supply remains an issue. But she also said that looming large is the prospect of interest rate rises, which the ECB has signalled now that its expensive and expansive quantitative easing programme has come to an end.
Yeah, we will face interest rate increases, possibly not until the end of this year, early next year. If you look at how competitive our market has become in the last 12 months, it has the ability to absorb that. The mortgage market has actually been very well controlled. And I think what we will not go into again is the type of debt that our society went into during the last boom period. It is very well regulated and very well run by the central bank.
Yeah, the inflation tends to be low. European economies are really underperforming. We tend to look a lot at what's happening in Ireland and the UK without really taking a broader sense, you know, with other economies where there are terrible things happening, such as Italy. So whether the rates rise or not, I think that if they do, they can't really go that far. They're going to teeter a lot of big nations over, and no one in Europe wants that. So I think we're actually going to be in a low-rate environment for longer than people suspect.
OK, let's hope you're right. Carol Dieter, financial advisor at mortgagebrokers.ie, my thanks to you. And thanks also to Marion Finnegan, chief economist with Cherry Fitzgerald, coming up our Friday gathering.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.